Hello, and welcome to Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project in collaboration with Shoshanworks, a global firm helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformations. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we build for resilient futures.
As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, the economy, and policy, and they're reframing how we build for resilient futures. In this podcast series, we're examining the ways that dynamic systems of information, incentive, and interaction are reshaping societal systems of governance and network orchestration. Traditional boundaries and operating norms are being updated. They are being replaced with ecosystemic models, our new economic engines for the digital era. I'm your host today. I am Marco Annunziata, co-founder of Annunziata and Desai Advisors. I'm an economics PhD, and I'm the former chief economist and head of business innovation strategy at General Electric. Prior to that, I worked in finance and in policy. My expertise lies at the intersection of global economic and financial trends with technology and innovation. I'm delighted to introduce my guest today, who is Robin Hutchison. Robin is a multi-sector transportation expert working at the center of cities, roadway safety, climate, supply chain, and technological transformation. Through Hutchison Advisory, she advises public and private sector clients on complex transportation systems to identify and harness opportunities and to decipher federal and local regulation. She was appointed by President Biden to serve in two key positions in the administration. As the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Safety Policy, she led the development of the National Roadway Safety Strategy and was a key contributor to the bipartisan infrastructure law, including as the author of the first of its kind $5 billion Safe Streets for All grant program for local government. As the administrator of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, she led a research and regulatory agency of over 1,200 people nationwide to improve roadway safety and support a stronger supply chain. Prior to that, she was the Director of Public Works for the City of Minneapolis, the Director of Transportation for the City of Salt Lake City, the President of the Board of Directors of the National Association of the City Transportation Officials, and a founding board member of the Open Mobility Foundation. Robin's experience also includes a long history as a private sector consultant at the local, national, and international scale. Robin leads the transparency and influential communication, and she is an entrepreneur at heart. Robin, welcome to our podcast. I'm delighted to have you here.
Thank you so much, Marco. Thank you so much for the invitation to join you, and I look forward to our talk today.
So then let's get started. You're an expert in multi-sector transportation. Now, your expertise goes well beyond cities, but I want to start our conversation by focusing on cities. So to set the stage, why are cities such a crucial transportation priority now and in the foreseeable future?
That is a great question to start with, especially in a conversation with me, because so much of my experience, not all of it, but so much of my experience has been in cities. And my lens that I see complex problems usually involves the city and the city at its heart and the city first. It's been my personal and professional experience, but it's also identified as a trend for the future that we're going to have to keep working towards solutions. So just a few pieces of information, statistics, why we're so focused on cities. I find myself starting every story with this, with the city. The world is urbanizing. According to the World Bank, approximately 56% of the world's population lives in cities. By 2050, 7 in 10 people will live in cities. So we are urbanizing globally. It is a place of business. More than 80% of global GDP is generated in cities. The less tangible, cities are places where we know they thrive, they buzz, there is energy. It is where innovation and climate response and prosperity are within reach of its inhabitants. So because we're so drawn to this energy and vibrancy of cities, we're focused on the infrastructure so acutely, because all of these activities, and it's especially true of transportation, really share the same space, share the same infrastructure, share the same physical space. So all of this activity comes together in the what we call the right-of-way, which is publicly held in trust for the people. So my work is focused not exclusively, but that lens I always see it through is what can we do with this public space held in trust for benefit. So that has been very formative for me, and it is very much a part of my work today as well.
It's a great way to start. And it's one of the reasons I love having you on the podcast today is you have a great perspective. You know the technologies involved, and you've worked in very important positions in public policy, both at the local and national level. So you have a very good sense of what the potential benefits are, what the challenges are, and also what the implementation challenges are. I want to move over a bit to the technology side now, Robin. So there are a number of technologies that have been coming online recently that have important potential impact on cities and transportation. I'm thinking of autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, but also smart city technologies, and perhaps the most eye-catching, which is the idea of air mobility. So my question, given your experience, what is the right mindset? What is the right approach to maximize the likelihood that we can harness these technologies to good effect? And what should we set as the top priorities?
I'd like to pause here because I want to assemble some of like my past thinking and my current thinking. I, in my distant past, felt resistant to technology. And then I came to realize that we would probably not reach our goals without understanding it and taking the bits of it that work for us as city planners. What I find in my work today is sometimes a disjoint between the way city builders talk about their needs and the way technologists talk about what they offer. And I think it's really important and possible to bring these two conversations closer together. So what I like to do is describe some of the challenges and really the opportunities that are in cities. And then hope that in that clear description of these opportunities, that technologists will build things for us. We tell you what we need, and please help us with solutions. And it is happening, and I want it to accelerate now. We have an amazing thing for you, yes. And I've been on the other end of those proposals, and sometimes they're great, and we're so excited to work with what's being offered and a company in the private sector and a great partnership. But sometimes it isn't what we need, or it's before its time. But I'll tell you, I want to like lay out just a couple things for anyone listening who wants to like think about how their piece of work, their piece of technology, what they're doing in digital infrastructure can kind of match to the pressures that cities feel. And I'm just like, there's so many, but in our transportation and infrastructure world, I'm just going to outline three. I have to put up roadway safety first because there are 43,000 people die on American highways every year. And the thing that concerns me most is the disproportionate impact on people who are walking, people outside of the vehicle. And when we think about cities, and we talked about them earlier, it's vibrant and bustling places, and they are places where people are outside of their vehicles and they are walking, and there are places where the right-of-way is very complicated. And there's so much movement and so much interaction and so much opportunity for conflict. Help us with this. Because we have a moral imperative, and this is, it keeps mayors, I've worked with mayors, it keeps them up at night thinking that their residents are at risk, and some residents have lost their lives just by moving around the city. So number one, roadway safety. Number two, climate. Cities are tackling emissions safety, climate. It's hard to say 1, 2, 3. It's more like ABC. Reducing emissions. And the only way to do that is to make it safer for people to move around without a single occupant vehicle. And then for those who drive, that's the electrification push. And it happens in cities. Where do people charge? How are the incentives being passed through? Whether that's in electric bikes or electric cars, electrification is going to help cities reduce their impact. Now let's bring in freight, movement of goods. We'll talk about that later, I think, how important that is. That is also a place where electrification can really help. And then third, or C, because these are not rank order, cities see the opportunity to improve equity outcomes for their residents. And especially in transportation, it's been so visible. When we look at programs that came out of the USG, like the Reconnecting Communities Grant Program that is specifically designed to reduce the past harms of the freeways that have come through neighborhoods in almost every American city, that created inequities in the quality of life for residents around those freeways. They were so often communities of color that were disproportionately impacted. And since that day, I think cities have seen some underinvestment in those neighborhoods. So cities are rethinking their equity strategies to use what's in the right of way and those pieces of infrastructure to improve equitable access to transportation for their residents. So those are like the big three that I really worked hard on and that I think cities really struggle with: roadway safety, climate and climate adaptation, and equity. Now we want technology to help us accelerate all of those positive outcomes that we're seeking.
So on these priorities, of the technologies you have seen so far, what looks to you most promising? And I'm thinking of the easy things that come to mind. You mentioned safety as one of the three priorities, and there's a lot of discussion on autonomous vehicles. Is that the solution? How do we implement it in a way that it can really help us improve safety to a very significant extent?
There isn't just one. There are, in my mind, movements that we want to attach to. And you started with vehicle technology, and yes, absolutely, vehicle technology. I don't want to jump all the way to autonomy because there are things that have already made a difference. And then there are a few things that are coming online in the near future that will continue to make a difference. And before we even talk about autonomy, we should talk about technology that will be required in vehicles: automatic emergency braking. I have personally sat in a truck as it was careening at 50 miles an hour with automatic emergency braking stopping us just an inch or two before a passenger vehicle in front of us. The technology works, and it will be required for not just vehicle-to-vehicle interactions, but for pedestrians as well. So that's the kind of vehicle technology that really can save lives. Autonomy is, we are in the age of rapid acceleration of the technology to the point where it is being deployed in American cities today. And you can hail an autonomous vehicle in a couple of American cities today. The hope is that autonomy will make things safer, but it is new. And companies who are deploying these technologies, it is their responsibility to collect the data so that we can see, is this going to be as helpful as we want it to be? And my hope is that it will be. Roadway safety is, we talk about it as a systems approach, but at the heart of the systems, that humans are fallible, and we always will be. And technology is, street design is near and dear to my heart. So we always are focused on that and the infrastructure, but this layer of technology on top of it will help. But there's another thing. There's another trend that I want to talk about. So you jumped to autonomy. I wanted to talk about that. But we need to talk about data, because data is being generated and made sense of it in like such a rapid pace. It's really accelerating. One area that is very interesting to those in the safety world is using telematics from vehicles to collect data on what we would call near misses. So we kind of backcast when we're working with safety data, like how many crashes did already occur versus how many crashes were narrowly avoided. And that would be a much more complete data set. So there are a few different companies that are collecting this data that is going to be extremely valuable in the future. So the way data is produced and collected is technology that is just like out of this world. And to me, we can't get enough of it. And it will take a new skill set and one that's building quickly to understand, assess it, and apply it for better interventions. And those are just a few thoughts on safety.
And those are they're a very good start. And also, there's so much here that we're going to unpack gradually. Still thinking of the issue of technology within cities, and the last point you made, the data is crucial. I just want to underscore that because often we tend to forget. We get excited about the potential of insights and advancements we can get from data. We don't focus enough on the collection of data and the quality of data. As you pointed out, the importance of having data not just on actual accidents, but also on accidents avoided. And so trying to build the data sets that can give us the most complete picture of the problem we're trying to address across a number of dimensions. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is air mobility. So air mobility is being promoted or hailed by some as a major solution to some of the city's problems. The basic idea being that with air travel or other air mobility within urban areas, we can open up an entirely new dimension. And therefore, you create an extra degree of freedom, and therefore everything will become easier. Can you ground us a bit, so to speak, on this? Tell us, what is air mobility in cities? How is it going to work?
It's exciting technology, for sure. And I'm watching how companies are either kind of aligning themselves with moving people or aligning themselves with moving goods. And they're both a very active space. And it's even more interesting if it's all electric, and there's plenty of companies that are committing to this and building prototypes for that. But I want to always ask the question about any exciting technologies, like, for who? I know it's not the same thing, but I keep thinking of, I recently flew into LaGuardia, and I was not on top of the rideshare thing, and I signed up too late for the rideshare, and I landed at 8, and they had a van for me at 11, and that's not going to work. I'm happy that exists, but I Googled other ways to get from LaGuardia to Manhattan, and a helicopter ride came up for about $200 one way. And there was a moment where I was like, in the situation I'm in right now, that actually doesn't seem that bad. But then I came to my senses and said, I'm not taking a helicopter to New York for $200 a seat. I will find a way. I will figure this out. And it brings me back to that question of who does this benefit? Who will be able to afford this? And is that going to further equity goals for accessibility? And ensuring that everyone who lives in a city or any community has the same access to jobs, school, grocery store, healthcare, and that it isn't reserved for those who can afford it. So that is the first thing that comes to my mind.
That's a very good point. I will interrupt you here for a second, Robin, because I'm wondering, do you see this, the equity implication of the technology is very important. Do you see it as an economic issue or as an infrastructure issue? Because I'm sure that tech experts, tech entrepreneurs working on this would immediately tell us, don't worry, it's expensive now, but give us a couple of years and it's going to be very cheap for anyone to use it.
I hope that's the case. No judgment. That's great. Let's do that. And let's make sure that we're asking. But you bring up a great point, Marco, because the infrastructure is a big piece of it too. And it was years ago when the National Association of City Transportation Officials and a little bit through Open Mobility Foundation, we were pulled into the conversations about urban air mobility and how cities would need to be a part of it. Vertiports are essential. And they need space. And some vertiports need a lot of space the more urban the area, the harder that is to do. So cities are beginning to think about, some cities more advanced than others, like LA and Miami. There's some front runners here. Cities are doing phenomenal work in creating policy around urban air mobility that addresses the question of equity, but also like the physical space that would be needed. These two are tied together. How a city thinks about its space, the space that they hold in public trust, needs to benefit their residents and their community in the very best way. So I think cities will be looking for equitable solutions. Can I digress for a second?
Absolutely.
There's a little roadmap here that it seems so far away to think about e-scooters and their relationship with urban air mobility. Okay. But there is one. When e-scooters dropped in on cities, this was around 2019. And they, just like a lot of other cities, I was the public works director in the city of Minneapolis. They dropped into our city and they were asking for forgiveness. It was a solution we thought would be helpful for climate inequity in particular. So we created the right structure to welcome them into our city. And then we put some parameters on their operation. One, you must share your data. Two, you must serve equally the city of Minneapolis. So you must serve neighborhoods that are sometimes overlooked if you are going to operate. So we had a license agreement that had these parameters, and they were largely about serving the whole community. So urban air mobility, when I think about what we did with e-scooters, as small as that may sound, it's a structure for saying, we welcome this new technology. We've never seen this thing before. And you totally surprised us. Like all of that happened, but we found a way to work together with a technology provider to say, you might be able to help us achieve some of our goals. So let's work together on a structure where you benefit and we benefit. And I see some of that structure being applicable to other types of technologies that will help cities achieve their goals.
Does that make sense?
I think it does. And it's a very helpful digression. It also brings me, we're talking about the importance of having open discussions with these new providers of technology so that we can ensure that the technology is more equally accessible throughout the urban areas. You also made the point when we were discussing air mobility of the importance of having sufficient space on the ground. So if I heard you correctly, the point you're making is that it's great to open up a new dimension in the airspace over the city, but in the end, we live on the ground. So in the end, we have to bring it back to the ground and connect the two dimensions. That is not a trivial challenge, is it?
It is not a trivial challenge at all. And I would say that urban air mobility is an example of a really interesting technology and one that's gained a lot of ground. There's numerous companies that are well on their way to actual service. And it is an example of something that we think about as a disconnected from what happens on the ground, but it's so connected what happens on the ground. And I think that's part of how we talk back to our early part of the conversation. Sometimes that's how we're talking past each other. I was in a meeting when I was the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Safety Policy, and I was in a meeting with really smart people. I felt like I was listening and absorbing just this wisdom of this urban air mobility working group. And I was newly off of city government and newly off of building actual infrastructure on the ground. And I kept waiting for the conversation to come around to what happens on the ground. And it never did. And I am a diplomat and a professional. So I did not jump in right away, but I called a few colleagues afterwards and said, where would be the place to discuss this? Like, what is this part of the strategy we're talking about? And might I suggest that it become a big part of the parameters and the framework that we're thinking about this in? And there was no resistance to it. It just hadn't really been a part of the conversation yet. That is how, back to the early part of the conversation, we can sometimes talk past each other. Like, how many inches on the ground? I am pointing out my window here. How many inches, feet, square feet, square meters do we need? And that is a part of any strategy. And I don't want to discount progress that has been made, the partnerships that I know exist between numerous companies and departments of transportation. It isn't that the conversation isn't happening. It's that it's maybe taken a little longer than it should, and that I think it needs to accelerate. If there is the idea that urban air mobility is going to be ubiquitous, equitable, and a solution to safety, climate equity for cities.
Do you see it as improving safety or making or putting safety at peril even more than it already is? To admit,
when I think about the biggest problems that cities are trying to solve, and if I say that roadway safety is first, I don't know that this is a thing that makes a difference in roadway safety. Perhaps in climate. I'd like to hear more. I would like to hear more about how this is something that might really work for the goals of a city, including roadway safety.
On climate, on the climate impact, my mind always goes back to the problem which is behind all this, which is generation storage, because it's very exciting to discuss new possibilities of electrification of the transport system, both on the ground and in the air. In the end, we have to produce the electricity. So if we can't produce it cleanly and make it accessible the way we want, then we're just burning more fossil fuels, which is what we've been doing over the last several years anyway. But the bringing it back to the cities is a broader theme of all these technologies, whether it's autonomous vehicles, air mobility. We've talked about data. We're talking about digital technology. There is a broader theme of digital technology in cities. I think you've called it digitizing the curb. I was familiar with discussions when I was at GE, lots of discussion on creating smart cities and implementing digital technologies to improve both traffic flows, safety, lighting, efficiency, etc. So it's a very broad theme, but what is your sense of where we are on this broad digitization of cities? What do you think is the best progress we've made so far, and where do you see the most promise, say, in the next 5 years?
Well, that's a really big question, and I'll do my best to unpack the pieces of it. Can we just talk about digitizing the curb a little bit? It's so broad that it might be helpful to take one example.
Absolutely,
and I can explain a little bit about the way I see it and its potential, whether it's accelerating and maybe a vision for it that I'll tie to freight, actually. We've been talking about digitizing the curb for a long time. It's become a focus of the Open Mobility Foundation. The curb space, think about when you're traveling in the city, the curb is where there's so much disorganization. Who's allowed to be where and for how long? Is it parking? Is it freight delivery? Is it open area? Is it disabled access? It's like, what is it? And a curb can be multiple different things and on one block and separated temporally by what can happen certain times of day. It is very complicated for cities. Managing the curb is also key to safety. It can reduce idling. It can create more equitable access in so many different ways. So the curb's like a really interesting piece of physical infrastructure that when managed right can have kind of an outsized impact on your city. So that's just like the physical part of it. Why we've spent so much time thinking about what happens on the curb. Digitizing the curb means it's also related to this concept of a digital twin. Digital twin is like the digital replica of your city. And if we just look at that with the curb and we create a digital replica of where our curbs are, what is allowed on those curbs? Is it changing by time of day? If there is a digital replica, we're now closer to setting up a digital handshake between those who need to use the curb and the rules that are established on the curb. I want to connect this to freight a little bit because I've learned so much about truck drivers and trucking in my time at the USDOT and as the administrator of FMC and FMCSA. And I've really honed in on understanding the relationship between trucking, cities, and the curb and what happens on the curb. So let's say a city is able to digitize their curb. And there is information now contained in a digital packet that is able to be pushed out to a telematics device that is in most, if not all, commercial motor vehicles. And it says evening delivery, only evening delivery allowed on these dates because it's maybe it's the Olympics or something, just for example. That driver knows exactly where to be and when and how. Digitally, without circling, double parking, it becomes much more seamless. But even more to the point, let's say there's a new model for delivery, and the last thing a truck driver wants is to come into a city. The last thing a truck driver wants, especially for large trucks, is to come into the city with a large truck. And let's say we can take that concept and apply it to a model where smaller electric vehicles are now delivering and they need so much less curb space and they are much more agile, creating improvements in safety and climate. And they too have this digital packet of information that tells them where they can be and when, what the rules are. This is in our reach. This is like in our grasp. Right now, there's a consortium of cities that are working on this. The USDOT issued numerous grants for smart city deployment that are now starting to come online. Cities like Portland and Seattle and Miami and Minneapolis, LA, they all are working together. Detroit working together to find, this is a perfect example. Like this is a great example of digitizing something in your city and making it really work on the ground. So taking the technological innovation and cleaning up what was one of the most complex problems in an urban city.
A very interesting example, very interesting way of looking at it. It raises to me two questions. I'm debating in my mind which one to start with because they are related. So maybe I'll ask you both questions at the same time and then you can answer them and address them in the best way possible because perhaps they're the same question. But when we get excited about digital technology, this is true about cities, it is true almost any other environment across our economy. Often the reaction is to think, oh, these new digital technologies are so revolutionary. They change the world so much that it would actually be great if we could entirely scrap the existing infrastructure, which has been designed for a non-digital world, and rebuild it, reimagine everything from scratch. And so my first question is this correct? As a city planner, would you prefer to have a blank slate and start somewhere in the middle of the desert and have carte blanche to design a city as you want? And the connected question is, in practice, you've worked in cities, you've worked in government, this has been your job. People like you who are in charge of building the infrastructure, maintaining it, upgrading it, thinking about what technology to build into it, how do they go about it? How does the process actually work? Which I think then goes back to the other issue we've discussed, which is what is the best way of getting technology, new technologies to plug into it?
I want you to think about the last time you took a trip somewhere, maybe to a city. And when you were in that city, what it felt like when you were exploring by foot, or you were sitting at a restaurant or in a cafe. Can you think of that? We might have to redo this because, Marco, you and I did not discuss this in our preparation. So
we don't need preparation.
Think about the last time, and for anyone who's listening, think about the last time you visited a place And what was like, what captivated your imagination in that place?
Okay, so my answer would be it depends on the kind of city, but I have two distinct and opposing reactions as I explore the city. One is the sense of wonder and curiosity, what I find attractive, interesting about the city's architecture. How easy is it for me to explore it? Whether the streets I walk through are welcoming and comfortable enough to move from one place to another? And if I want to explore the city on a larger scale, how easy can I orient myself on public transportation? The second reaction I have is sometimes a defensive reaction, damage limitation. So a quick mapping of the threats around me. How likely am I to be run over as I try to cross the street? How safe do I feel on the sidewalk? So I would say these are my two main reactions as I evaluate a new urban environment: curiosity and interest versus threat assessment.
They're both rooted in physical infrastructure.
Absolutely.
I think humans connect to the physical infrastructure in a very visceral way. The city I live in Minneapolis, the city I live in is a city of lakes and trails and forests and parks. And it is why I live here, is because I have a visceral connection to the smells and the sounds and nature. I also love bustling cities, and you could drop me in the middle of New York and I would love it almost as much. For the ability to get anywhere on the subway and the ability to find little corners and places that are small streets to just wander and explore. And that's all rooted in physical infrastructure. But it's not lost on me that you find those places with what? A piece of handheld technology. That's how we navigate now. So there's this overlay of the digital world that helps us explore cities. As you said, what are the threats? What do we need to be watching for in cities? A lot of that is this digital overlay of what we learn through technology. But I can boil it down to we talk about a lot of sexy technology. Like digitizing the curb is kind of sexy in my world. Urban air mobility is very sexy. Like this is like we're gonna have flying cars. You know this. It is. But we could just talk about street lighting. So. You're in a city, you're assessing your threats, and I'm just going by your example, and it's dark, and you're not really sure where you are, but it's well lit. And you don't feel like you're going to get run over by a car because the street is lit at night. This is just a really simple example. Street lighting it's energy for a city. It can be expensive for a city, but there are now systems in place that detect activity and whether or not those streetlights should be on or they should be off. That is so simple, but that is a technological digital solution for a city or a town or any place that will help them save money, that will reduce energy consumption, that also helps a person who's experiencing that piece of infrastructure for themselves experience it well.
It is excellent. And so I want to go back to the first consideration you made here, Robin, which is that we experience the physical space. And so we have almost a visceral reaction, in some cases, a visceral attachment to the physical space. So would you argue that actually the infrastructure we already have, doesn't it embody a certain amount of wisdom? Because if we love a place like Minneapolis, and I assume you're surrounded by other people who love the same environment, and over the years and the decades have been building the infrastructure so as to make the place usable, enjoyable. So is there a value to saying, look, there's a lot of wisdom embodied in the existing physical infrastructure. Let's try to first gradually think of the best way of merging the digital into it. And let's think of a gradual mechanism for upgrading it?
Most cities, large and small, have places that feel viscerally great and have many places that feel either unsafe or loud or just unpleasant to be in. And it's not a coincidence that those are the more car-dominated places. City. Urban arterials. Every city has them. And they are places that are usually working against all of those city goals. And the reality is that people need to move around. And I have done enough work in transportation to know that a city, you need to maintain a certain level of mobility, but those spaces that feel bad to you, I'm just going to use one example, urban arterials, are also the spaces where there's so much opportunity to transform both the physical and the digital to achieve these goals of like safety and climate and equity. And they're just in reverse order. For equity, people of color are far more likely to be hit and killed when they are walking. And speed is the biggest determining factor of whether someone dies when they are hit by a car. And speed is kind of the name of the game on urban arterials. They're meant to move you fast. So having digital solutions that help people not speed, these exist already. This is digital enforcement that is available today and possible in some cities and still not possible in others due to state legislation. But this is available, proven technology that can provide that, the stick to helping people slow down. And that improves safety overall. Red light running is a big issue on these urban arterials and in cities generally. That same technology can be used to dissuade people from breaking the law. And then simple timing of signals is, again, a very ubiquitous technology. Can help a group of vehicles travel at a particular speed that reduces emissions. So there's a lot of tech that just lays right down on infrastructure that can help reach those goals. I just gave a few examples. But underlying all that, like I am so cognizant that it's never just the tech. It's never just the technology. It has to be first the infrastructure. Because if you're not rethinking what that urban arterial is, you can put all the technology on that you want and you won't have the same effect. But if you're rethinking what the infrastructure is for people, and then also you apply tech solutions on top of it, you're going to make progress.
You mentioned earlier that there is almost a language barrier between city planners and tech entrepreneurs and leaders. What is being done to bridge that gap? And how optimistic are you that we're moving towards a situation where there can be a better collaboration and therefore better outcomes?
Well, there's three things that I would say here. One is that I think it's getting a little closer because city planners and engineers are increasingly involved in more than just the infrastructure now. They're increasingly educated in and leaders in artificial intelligence, applying that to transportation systems, vehicle to everything. Technology is now become a policy of the USD, DOT that will help improve safety outcomes. It lays right down on top of physical infrastructure. Those are transportation professionals who are so well versed in it. ITS America, there's like an amazing staff and team there that really helps to bridge that gap. And I think there's been a ton of progress made. But like an organization, like I just noted, is fewer cities than you might think. And so there still exists this gap. One thing that happens is that cities, and this was true for me, it's like we're closest to the ground and we're dealing with things in real time. And sometimes we don't have the same bandwidth to be able to be this deeper dive. So what I think is really needed is that cities have a place to just talk about their challenges. And that technologists come with solutions to those challenges. This is what I want to do. To be perfectly frank, like I, after having worked as a consultant and then in cities and then at the USDOT, and my second position at the USD was had a very heavy sort of technology lean to it, I would like to help that translation along. And maybe by telling the stories, like some of the stories I told today, I am not known as a technologist. I'm not quite known as a technologist, but I am known as someone who has harnessed technology to solve problems and would like to repeat that over and over again so that cities can accelerate on the goals they're trying to deliver on.
I think that it would be and will be, I'm convinced, a tremendous contribution because we have technologists, an abundance of technologists almost. It feels like the scarce commodity, to speak in economics terminology, is really people like you who understand both terms of the equation. So who understand enough of the technology to know how to bring it to bear, but also understand the problem. As you pointed out, the key thing is to start by understanding the problems, the challenges, and the priorities for cities. And then from there, trying to understand what technologies do we need? How do we bring them to bear? Robin, this has been a fantastic conversation. Is there anything crucial that we have left out or any final takeaway you would like to leave to the audience?
The more we do together with an understanding of each other's needs and opportunities, the faster we're going to go. And at the end of the day, it comes down to like how a person feels and how the place they choose to live and work and go to school and raise kids and do anything else that they want to do in life. That kind of visceral feeling of safety and security, a lack of those threats, and the ability to lead a healthy and fulfilling life is going to be made better by, I'm going to start this part over because I know what I want to say. And Jessica told me that we would be able to cut some things out.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Go for it.
We're just going to go back to the start because I have these ideas that, but they're not, I would have had to like prepare a little bit of this first. So thanks for asking that final question. Just in closing, I think keeping the human at the center and the human's experience first is the best path for both building infrastructure and applying the technology that makes it even better. Really comes down to the experience of a person, just like we were talking about. How do you feel when you're visiting a place? It's been great to talk to you. And I really appreciated all of your questions and our discussion. And I hope that it's been informative.
Been very informative. And I really appreciate your thoughtful perspective. Lots of interesting insights. I hope that listening to the podcast, that there will be more policymakers, city planners, and tech entrepreneurs who will reach out to you to leverage your expertise to try to build this bridge. And personally, I feel more optimistic about the future of cities, knowing that there are people like you involved in making this transition. So thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin Hutchison. And thanks everyone for joining us today. Check out this season's new episodes as we continue to explore the convergence of innovation, technology, and new business models, and how this convergence is reshaping industry, and most importantly, what it means for ecosystemic futures. Follow us, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever your favorite place for podcasts is, and you can always learn more or apply to be a guest speaker at shoshinworks.com. Thanks, everyone.